Hello, welcome back to another episode of the Photographers Keeping It Real podcast. I'm your host, Scott Carney from Scott Carney Photography, and this week I'm chatting to the wonderful Tom Eisenberg, London-based wedding photographer. And I want to start by apologising to Tom because we recorded this a few months ago and it has taken me a while to get this episode out. Had a few things going on, and so very much my fault, so apologies, Tom. But it was so nice to sit down with Tom, chat about his business, about weddings, and yeah, just to do another episode. So thank you for hanging in there, and I hope you enjoy this one. We look at Kindergarten Cop, the wonderful Arnold Schwarzenegger film. We talk about burnout, if you don't have a break over autumn, winter, and you're kind of shooting through the winter. Updating your portfolio as you go throughout the year. Overwhelmed with the new year marketing and that, you know, everyone being super busy in January with inquiries and doing loads of marketing and everything. The corporate photography work and other photography work alongside weddings. Do you need to know how to use flash for wedding photography? A 35 and 50 mil lens combo, not a combo you hear about as much as, you know, the 35, 85 and 28, 50 type thing. So we talk a little bit about Tom's use of that. And then we talk about dance floor lighting, having lighting knowledge up your sleeve when you need it, and just a little bit about flash in general. Members only, if you are a Photographers Keeping It Real member, you can listen to an extended version of the podcast where we talk about Tom's main marketing channels, his lead sources, and we go in depth a little bit onto his SEO and what he's been doing with that. As always, you can find all the show links below and on the page on the website. So just head over to podcast on the PKIR website and you can find all the notes in there, links. You can listen there as well as all your main podcast places. If you do fancy leaving a review, if you've listened to any of the podcasts, I don't think we've got any, but if you want to be the first, I'll, drop a review, let me know, and I'll send you something. So yeah, I hope you enjoy this episode. Thanks again for hanging in there. We've got a couple of good episodes coming up, and I'll be recording loads more over the next month or two as well. So exciting. The round two for the PKR Awards for 2024, the results are out. So again, if you haven't seen them already, head over to the website, you can see that round. And round three will be opening soon. This year we've got five rounds, so an extra round than we've had before. So even more chances to win. And it's very tight up at that top 10, top 20. So if you haven't submitted yet or you'd like to join, please jump over to the website. And if you've got any questions at all, just drop me a message. Right, let's get on with the show. Cool. So, hey, Tom, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Scott. Great to be here.
Yeah, well, great to have you. So I think your website might be the first one I've looked at of a wedding photographer that has Kindergarten Cop mentioned on it.
Get to the chopper. Oh, that's a different one. Who is your daddy and what does he do? Kindergarten Cop.
Yeah, so good, isn't it? Such a good film.
Yeah, I feel like it's a masterpiece in a weird, weird way that doesn't really make sense. Like, it doesn't exist in the real world, but if you take it on its own terms, it's actually quite a fun film.
Yeah, well, I think I watched it again, like, either back end of November or December. You know, there's sort of things they start showing on TV, isn't it? Even though it's not, you know, overly Christmassy, I guess. It's just one of those kind of family films. But
I remember, like, when I grew up, I was watching it on like a VHS that was recorded from TV. So it didn't have any of the, like, the gunshots or anything like that. And so when I saw like the uncensored version, I was like really shocked. And that's why, it's what makes the film so weird. Like, it's a film that's essentially a family film aimed at children, but has loads of blood by that standard. So that's why it just makes no sense as a film, and why I sort of have this weird nostalgic love for it, you know?
Yeah, so it's weirdly violent, actually, isn't it? But
yeah.
How's 2024 started?
Yeah, well, I mean, I've started 2024 feeling pretty burnt out, to be honest, because I never really had that downtime that, you know, the fabled wedding photographer downtime you're supposed to have in, like, late autumn, early winter, because I think I ended up, my last wedding was actually on the 10th of November, and my thought process was just ease into Christmas, get some bits done. But actually, in the end, I ended up picking up a fair bit of corporate work and ended up second shooting a couple of times in the crimbo limbo between Christmas and New Year. And so it's been great. And obviously that did definitely help with the financial cost of Christmas and all that stuff. But I've sort of ended the year started the year not feeling like I've had a break and not feeling that kind of like refreshed feeling. So far I'm enjoying it. I'm also cursing past Tom because I'm going through trying to update my portfolio, and I didn't do anything to make my life easier throughout the year. So now I'm essentially, it's quite a mammoth task, like collating all the RAWs and things like that, and all the high-res files for update my portfolio on my website. So it's been a decent start to the year, but I haven't made life easy for myself. And pretty much the only other photography related activity I've had is stabbing myself in the hand with a screwdriver while trying to fix one of my flashes. So I hope the Godox flash was worth it.
Is that the shoe bit that's like broken, or I feel like that's a thing, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't know why, but it's made out of plastic on Sony's for some reason. And I had gone for ages without breaking them, and I kept on hearing in like Facebook groups how they were really like fragile, and I was being all smug, thinking I was like just special or something. And then I broke two in the last year, and I just thought I've got to sort this out because I was kind of using them off camera, stuff like that, and it's a lot easier using one camera for the way I approach the dance floor, for example. So I just kind of my hand slipped, and I sort of put quite a deep cut in my hand, and it was like one of those things where I just sort of looked at it and I just sort of freaked out for about 30 seconds, and then it started bleeding a lot, and I kind of snapped back to reality. But yeah, I'm not even sure it was really worth it.
I've never had any issues with the Godox flashes, but yeah, like on the Fuji, I think they're metal, but obviously they're quite small cameras, and then they're quite a reasonably big flash on top, and I like dangle it from the like spider holster thing and all that, and I've never had any break. So but yeah, it must just be the plastic thing versus metal, I guess that's the issue. But
Yeah, like
yeah.
on the hot shoe, you can actually see the bit where it breaks because it's plastic, so it's so annoying.
Yeah, nightmare. Yeah, the burnout thing's interesting, isn't it? So like I was saying before we recorded as well, I shot like 29th and 30th of December, which normally I try not to shoot in that Christmas New Year period, because like it's really nice, obviously, you know, especially if you've got kids or whatever, or like, you know, a life, I guess, outside of photography, like to have that switch off and have a bit of time for Christmas and New Year. And I think it's like a time when a lot of people are off as well, so you don't feel too much like, I don't know if you're like this in January, but I'm, you know, already seeing people, loads of people post everywhere, seeing people's adverts pop up, and I'm like, oh God, I haven't really finished last year yet. I'm not mentally ready to start pushing for this year, but then everyone else is, and you feel like, am I going to miss out if I don't? And so then I'm kind of in that panic mode of like trying to get everything finished from last year and all that. So I feel like that little period of Christmas, New Year, no one's really doing much, you know, so it's kind of a nice time to take off and not worry. But yeah, now I'm kind of like, oh, I always regret it at the time, because I'm like, it's nice having that period. But obviously it's hard to say no, because like you say, especially like similar to you, my last wedding was like November, and then my next one's like March, so it's like really nice money to have that in. And
Totally.
they were good weddings, but yeah, like it's just that it's interesting, isn't it? I don't know if it's just me, or if there's probably other people feel like that, but some people just seem really on the ball with January, and as soon as it hits, they're like, here's, you know, I'm doing these ads and these funnels, and like, you know, I've got all this stuff ready for social to post and all this stuff, and I'm like, I haven't done any of that yet. But
Yeah, I feel like I spent like so much of last year in kind of just survival mode, kind of just doing what I needed to do to like serve my clients and look after my daughter and stuff like that. And between those things, like a lot of stuff fell by the wayside. And because I then didn't sort of finish and have much of a break, I've sort of like I'm still haven't really left that mindset behind just yet, which isn't ideal when you're supposed to be fresh and marketing yourself to people who've never heard of you before and things like that. So it's a bit of a challenge when you shoot all the way through, but it was worth it in most ways, and I'm sure I'll be grateful for it in the end. But yeah, I'll get there. I reckon I'm probably about another week away from feeling, you know, normal, hopefully.
yeah, that's good. Yeah, I've kind of said I'm taking January to like say catch up, make sure I'm done, ready for starting shooting again in March. I should have February, so yeah, hopefully it'll all be fine. But yeah, it's always a panic, isn't it? Especially, I don't know what your numbers like this year, but I'm still down a little bit. So like last year I came into the year pretty much fully booked. I took on a few extra, and so it's kind of like wasn't really worried at all. Whereas this year I could do with more, so it's so then I'm also thinking like, well, I need to market obviously, and all the open days are happening and all that now, and like so people are obviously out there, and I've had a few inquiries this week. But
So I'm down certainly compared to last year. Similarly to you, I was like fully booked essentially by the start of the year. Well, mostly anyway. And yeah, this year I'm a bit down, but I'm not like too worried at the moment because I picked up more like last minute bookings than I thought last year, which is one of the reasons why I ended up overworked, was because I kept on saying yes to things. I think that booking patterns have changed after COVID. I think people's mentality overall is different. It's a weird time geopolitically, economically, all that stuff. So I think people are just kind of figuring things out as they go. And so I was getting inquiries like for the same month and things like that, some of which I had to turn away. And so it makes me think that there probably are Like, it's probably going to be a similar pattern this year, mostly.
Yeah, and hopefully it'll be fine. Like I say, I'm not really going to be going too crazy till February anyway with marketing and stuff, so we'll see. But yeah, it's all good. Image organization you mentioned, that's a good one, isn't it? Because I'm literally in the same boat. So I was like, I know I need to add a few more images to my portfolio. I've done a few throughout the year, but usually, like, yeah, so it's a good time to go through the website, isn't it? So I need to do that. Awards and stuff is a good time for me to try and organize a bit for that, so I can, you know, submit to any I'm going to submit to this year and stuff. And but yeah, I'm similar. Like, I haven't been that organized throughout the year. Like, obviously, I've got all my backups and everything like that. It's all safe, but it's just not, yeah, it's not as easy. So I've started a new Lightroom catalog for this year. I'm just going to try. So last year, I did just one for each shoot. Weirdly, my mind, I think I've mentioned this on the podcast before, but I like to have, like, you know, each wedding, you know, obviously with the date and the couple and stuff, and then everything to do that wedding's in their folder. And I just always managed, for some reason, my brain just processes that easier. But then obviously when it comes to like picking out images, or if I want to re-edit anything, or I've got to open up each catalog individually, so it's a bit of a pain. Whereas if I just had one for the year, I could then obviously, I guess, five star or whatever, like ones that maybe portfolio images or ones for awards. And so I think I'm going to try that this year and see if I can, see if it makes my life a bit easier for stuff like that. Cause it just becomes a bigger task. And now I can't just sit down for an hour and pick a few images out. It's kind of going to take longer to go through everything. So.
Yeah, totally. I started mine yesterday, and just getting them together is took almost the whole day, basically. And I mean, I'm a very Lightroom heavy user in the sense that, like, I do have Photo Mechanic, but I don't really use it. So not much anyway. So I kind of just start a new catalog every year and kind of have everything in there. I cull in Lightroom and edit there, and all the rest of it I do as much in Lightroom as possible, so that, like, it's all there, and then in theory that should help me stay organized. The reality is different, but that's my aim, you know.
Yeah, I still cull in Photo Mechanic actually, and then import the, I do like a light, you know, it's not the final cull, but I do fairly, so maybe if I shoot say 8,000, I might get down to like 1500 or 2000 something, then chuck them in Lightroom and do a further cull. I don't know. I think it's just the age-old time of like slow computers. It just takes so long to import images and build all the previews and all that stuff. I just couldn't be bothered with it, but it's probably a lot better now. But yeah, so I still use Photo Mechanic to cull and then drop them into Lightroom and then do it that way. But yeah, and then I sort of thought, I think Sam Heard or someone who said that they, you know, obviously at the end of the year or whenever throughout the year, they kind of pick out the best ones from each wedding. They'll have them in like a catalog or whatever as well. So I could probably do that, but. But yeah, I'm going to try and just have one master catalogue and try and keep it organised this year, but we'll see.
Yeah, my intention this year is basically I'm going to try and have a workflow where at the end of the wedding, I select 50 to 100 images that are going to be bloggable, that standard, and then maybe make that the slideshow. And then from those images, that'll be where I pick my best of come the end of the year. So at least it's a bit less of an intense task. So that's my like thought process, but we'll see if that, you know what they say about like battle plans, it doesn't survive first contact with the enemy. We'll see about this, you know.
I think one of the advantages of me shooting a bit less this year as well, I should have a bit more time, so in theory it's doable, but we will see. I'll insert this clip into next January's podcast and see if I've lived up to it or not. I probably won't, because I'll forget and I'll have to go back through the podcast, which I won't do, but anyway,
yeah, we'll that see. Really would be keeping it real, Scott, you know.
It would be definitely not that organized. You mentioned corporate work a bit then. So do you do a lot of like, what's the split of like weddings and corporate stuff then? And
I don't do a lot. I think probably like a lot of people, I pick up some if it comes my way. And in this instance, like the jobs that came my way were like one for a friend of mine who I actually went to school with a depressingly long amount of time ago. She's got a rehab company and she's just put me on and off here and there to do like headshots and things like that for them. And I did some work that a friend of mine sent my way. She's moved up to Northumberland, so not far from you, I suppose.
Yeah, no.
She's still doing weddings in London, but like these jobs aren't well paid enough to like justify her travel, and it's just about doable if you live in London to make it worthwhile. So there was like three or four dates throughout December where it's like next day edits and things like that. And so it sort of kept me busy. It was quite fun. So I'd say the split is overwhelmingly in favor of weddings, but it's been handy to do those like jobs because most of those were weekdays as well. So, you know, always sits well with weddings.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. And I always think when people do it, it does make sense. Like, you know, like you say, you've got, especially if it's in the week, it's quite last minute. So it's not like you're having to book a Saturday off for a corporate job a year in advance and then you're losing out on a wedding. It's kind of all, you know, just adds to the income a bit, doesn't it? But are you actively like promoting it? Do you have like stuff on your website of corporate work, or is it just kind of like, say, through word of mouth and other photographers, that kind of thing?
It's mainly word of mouth. I mean, I do have a portfolio that I could use to set up a website with, because at the last company I worked for when I had a day job in TV, I made friends with the marketing manager there, and she needed a photographer. And so the sort of rough promise was that I would do like photography for her for free. There weren't like any expectations, and I kind of got to practice stuff quite a lot. And it was a TV company, and they did what's called outside broadcast, which is, they did studio stuff too, but mainly stuff on the road. So basically making TV happen outside of a studio, basically. And so I was doing things like headshots for the company, event photography for the company, behind the scenes of like jobs. I got to go to like some of the like Chelsea Flower Show and Queen's tennis tournament and Premier League grounds and Champions League matches. And I also did things like, they had these like giant, as you can imagine, giant broadcast vehicles that have like satellites sitting on top of them. And they needed pictures taken of them in the warehouse that made them look nice. But the warehouse was an absolute nightmare of cables everywhere and stuff like that. So I like did things like doing a multiple exposure where I got like the marketing manager to walk around the each truck, like firing my flash each time, and then combine those exposures to get a picture of the trucks and things like that. So I got to work on some skills that I probably wouldn't have had the chance to practice in such a environment, and did it for free in a way that meant that there was no real problem if it didn't work out, because they hadn't paid me. So I probably shouldn't have worked for free, but at the same time, it's quite useful to build some skills, which I'm now using. And so now I do have a portfolio. I haven't got around to building a website, but that is one of my sort of medium to long-term aims, basically.
That's really interesting. Like, I wouldn't even know where to start with getting someone to walk around with a flash and all that, really, to be honest. But it sounds good.
Yeah, it was quite fun. I mean, I had to kind of make it up on the fly, because everyone just assumes you can do every kind of photography if you're a photographer. They just assume you know. And my policy is always to say yes to things, which is, I don't know if that's the best policy, but it's been how I've approached things. And so I just kind of went with it, and I kind of figured out that was how they must have done, because they had existing photos I had to sort of roughly match with. And so I kind of figured out that's what they must have done. And I had to climb this like massive sort of covered ladder, and with my photography bag on my back, to get to the top, to get this sort of right perspective to photograph these massive trucks in a warehouse. And I later found out that I'd actually climbed up the outside of it, which you're really not supposed to do in terms of health and safety, because like little platforms you're supposed to climb up. And I'd unnecessarily risked my life for a free job. So again, not really worth it.
So I guess so the van was in a warehouse, because there's so much stuff around, you just wanted the van lit, essentially.
Yeah, exactly. And then you can like brush in and out. You can, if you've got like a black exposure of part of it, you can brush that back in if there's like an unflattering cable in the way and things like that. So it's all, you know, and it's also because a lot of corporate jobs, in my experience, they're not very organized, because they don't really know what to do. So turning up and having to come up with a plan on the fly, I could be wrong about this, but I think that's a lot of the way that corporate jobs go. And so having to like work with that was quite a good experience. And like, you can't take anything for granted. Like, for example, once I was supposed to be doing some headshots in the studio that they use for the BT Champions League games. And I'd been told that they'd leave all the lights up for us. And I was a bit sloppy, I think, but I didn't bring a flash with me, because I was like, oh, they'll leave the lights up. If it's good enough to light it for TV, it's good enough for me to just do some quick headshots. And when I got there, the lights had been completely dismantled. The set was there, but not properly lit. And there was one light that they were able to turn on for me. And luckily I was able to use that and get them in the right sort of area and the right angle and things like that. But it was a like little lesson in how you can't necessarily rely on people to do what they say they're going to do. And so you should have the kit to do the job. And so you learn all these little lessons just doing that. And like I say, because I was doing it for free, I was like much more relaxed than I would have been if I was like getting paid quite a lot to do it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose, like you say, you're right. Like, everyone just thinks, oh, you're a photographer, great, I need this photo, you know, a photo of this thing. You're not like, oh, yeah, but I'm kind of a documentary wedding photographer, really. So I don't know about all that stuff. But, like, yeah, people don't get it, do they? They don't know the difference necessarily. It's like, well, yeah, you've got a good camera, you're a photographer. Surely you know how to get this image or whatever. And so, yeah
exactly. Because I generally just shoot 35 and 50 as my two lenses, sometimes 24 and 50. And, like, everyone assumes you've got like a 70-200 or something like that, which I never use. I don't even really like using my 85. I use it if I have to. But you know, like people just assume you've done every kind of genre of photography and that you sort of trained in some kind of like, you know, martial arts dojo, but for photographers and just like hardened skills, you know, and actually you kind of have to work it out. But I always think that that kind of mindset of like going to a shoot and having to solve problems is really useful to have in on a wedding day or on any kind of photography job, because I say that a lot of it, we talk about like creativity a lot, and I'd say using creativity to solve problems is like a huge part of the photographer's job. So yeah, I'd say I spend a lot of my that doing that stuff has been like quite useful. Just like the mental skills to come in and do a wedding has been so handy, you know.
Yeah, like rainy, or at least it gets dark so fast. Like in both my December, both those end of December weddings were 2 o'clock ceremonies. So you really have, like, after the ceremony, like an hour at most of light. So yeah, as soon as it's wet or anything, I've kind of then got to be like, right, I've got to do this, you know, group shots inside. Now it's pretty basic how I would light them, but at least, you know, at least I'm like, well, I need at least the knowledge to be able to put up a couple of flashes and light a group. So I've got that option, I guess. And like, yeah, so all these skills, I suppose, are useful. And yeah, I guess sometimes I think with corporate, I'm like, oh, it must be like they're so organized and professional because it's like a corporate setting and all this. But like you say, a lot of times, I guess they're not. They're just kind of like, yeah, we need some photos. So and so is coming today. And like you just rock up. And like you say, you've got this idea in your head probably of what's going to happen. And it'd be so organized and it's just not. And you maybe haven't got that much time. And like you say, things aren't looking as you imagine. And so, yeah, it's good that you can like, good that you feel confident just to go and do that, to be fair, and get on with
Yeah,
it.
I mean, I wouldn't say I've yet built that bulletproof confidence, but it's been a much better than I used to be. And I mean, I used to work in, you know, I've worked for like TV companies and stuff like that have this semi fairly corporate co culture, like, and you just sort of realize that everyone's just so busy, they're kind of just doing their best, and so they don't have the time to like babysit you. So you've got to look after yourself, and that's like it's like that on a wedding. Like when I did my first few weddings, I hadn't even been to that many as a guest, so I was kind of having to be quite like, okay, what happens next and things like that, and kind of having to really coach myself through it to be like, what do I need to get from this moment that's about to happen, I assume. And so it definitely is a useful skill to have as a photographer to build that.
Yeah, like you say, even now and again, like I'll get surprised by things at weddings, which, you know, obviously you've been doing it a while now and stuff. So, you know, oftentimes it runs similar, you know, timelines, doesn't it, and things like that. And there's not too much that's surprising, but yeah, it's really useful, like I say, especially if you're starting out, I guess, to just remember that,
Yeah,
like, yeah,
exactly.
you've got to be adaptable, I guess. And
Yeah, I mean, I still remember I did a wedding once where the bride and groom were very into their fitness, and the groom was actually some kind of fitness influencer and very muscular man. And on the wedding day, during like bridal prep, the bride sort of sidled up to me and said, can you take some pictures of me in my underwear, please, for a birthday present for my husband? And I was like, oh, I don't even like really look at boudoir photography. So I was like, yes, because again, I like to say yes to things. And so I ended up in this scenario where we're in the bathroom together and she's in her underwear, and I'm having to sort of photograph her and this, I'm relatively early on at this point and having to kind of wing it. And it was a bit scary, but she was quite nice about it. But it was quite funny when she said, can I take my bra off and put my veil over my breasts? I was just like so unbelievably awkward. And then talking about corporate work, she actually wanted me to do some branding photography for her about 2 years later. And so I turned up at her flat and her husband was there, and he sort of just looked at me, and he's one of those people who always looks a bit angry anyway. And I
yeah.
suddenly thought, I'm in a room alone with an angry, muscular man who could probably snap me in two. And he said, I saw those photos. And I said, yeah, okay, great. And I thought to myself, you know, this is obviously how I die. Of course it was going to be this way. And he said, I love them. And I thought, thank God. So, I mean, again, it was another like thing of having to be like, figure it out, you know, have something in mind. And, you know, I've never done a boudoir shoot since, but at least now I know roughly what I would do, you know.
Yeah, but I mean, I've never done one either, but yeah, I guess I get, yeah, I suppose if you're the sort of the bride or whoever's the sort of person who'd be like, can you do this for me, they're obviously like into it, aren't they? Or they know the husband will probably be into it, it's probably fine. But and it's not probably as awkward for them because they probably don't care. So it's one of those things, I guess, isn't it? It's like, yeah, sure, just seem relatively confident, get on with it, put them in some light and you'll be fine, kind of thing. But yeah.
Yeah, totally. I mean, they're both into fitness, so I guess that whole world is a bit about showing off your body, isn't it? So slightly different.
Yeah, I went to the gym yesterday for like the first time in a long, long time. And if you can see me fidgeting around a lot, it's probably because my legs are very sore. But the only people in the gym with like the tops off are the people who were in good shape. So I guess it's, you know,
yeah,
it's fair enough. You work hard on it, I guess. But yeah, so 35-50. So are you basically what you 35 on one camera, 50 on the other, and that's pretty much all day. Unless you need wider, you go to 24, and that's it. Really, you don't really shoot at 85 on a wedding day at all in general.
No, I could try and limit 85. I just find that it makes me boring. I just get sort of headshots with it kind of thing. And I've seen some people do some great stuff using the compression really cleverly, but I just never really in that headspace when I'm using an 85. And I kind of realized that I liked 50 because I feel like I can get what I want with an 85, which is a bit closer, a bit more shallow depth of field when needed. But it's like you're also never in the position, or very rarely in the position, where something starts happening closer to you and you've got the 50 is too long for it. You know, like with the 85, if someone's a couple of steps away from you, they start doing something funny or something worth capturing, you have to like throw yourself backwards or change cameras. And by the time you've done either of those things, you might have missed the moment. Whereas with a 50, you stand a half chance of grabbing those things. And it seems mad to use a 35 and a 50 because people say they're too close together, and they are close together. But I feel like I use the 50 in different ways. There's something about the perspective. It's very like, because it's like that standard look, it's very correct. So you can get a flattering picture out of someone. You can get quite close with it. You can get quite far. And the perspective's nice. It also works well for verticals, which I'm doing a bit more of at the moment. So I've got quite into 50. And my bread and butter is a 35. Like that's, that's the camera I pick up by default, and I just know where I am with that. But I have played with the 24 for documentary, which is fine, and I do enjoy it, but you do have to get a lot closer, and so it's a bit of a step change for me. So, but I have a 24, which I do pull out every once in a while when I feel like I need it, but also I have a Tamron 17-28, which is for the dance floor, and I basically just use it as a 17mm prime kind of thing because I like to get close and get wide for the dance floor. So but mostly 35 and 50 for, you know, whatever that would be, like 90% of the day.
Yeah, I've used a 50 more because I used to be 35-85, just like pretty standard, and then done more like 28 and 50 this year, which has been kind of quite nice. Last year, whatever, has been quite nice. And then yeah, a lot of people are really good with 24, but yeah, you do have to be super close and like concentrate a lot on the edges and stuff, I guess. And don't know, some people do a really good job of it, but I just find, yeah, it's a little bit too wide for me. Even a 28 is like a dip, you know, does make a big difference, those few mils. But
yeah, absolutely, yeah.
But yeah, I don't
it's
know,
quite epic though. I like the epicness of 24, like that distortion or whatever, that it just gives it a slightly epic feel. So when it's right, it really works. So I do love it for that.
Yeah, Patrick Mattia, do you know Patrick?
Yeah,
he second shot for me last year, and he used 24 quite a lot, and it's really does a really good job with it. But
I've actually recently bought a used Leica Q as a like a personal camera, and that's a fixed 28mm f1.7 prime, and I've really enjoyed it actually more than I thought, because a lot of the time I'm using it in like family situations and things like that. Like at my mum's house, we had like a family mock-mas get together because we couldn't all be together for Christmas. I've got two brothers and a sister. They've got partners and kids. So it's all a lot of people to coordinate. And so just having that 28 meant I could get kind of, my mum's house is a bit tight, but I could get the compositions I wanted with it quite easily. And so I did see if Sony, which I shoot with, if they did a 28, which they do, but it's not a very good lens in my opinion. If they did a 28, I'd like seriously consider getting it, because I think it's quite a usable focal length, and I'm enjoying the challenge of using it. It's been quite fun.
Yeah, so they do like a 28 G Master, is it, and then the 35, I guess. So they jump to that. So the 28, they don't have like a G Master 28. Yeah. Is that right? I'm not very down with Sony stuff, but yeah. I think
they've got a 24 G Master, yeah, 35, 50, and then I think a 135 and some other stuff as well, like some zooms, which I don't use. But yeah. They've got a 28 f2, like very like the vanilla Sony brand lens, and it's just it's quite soft, and I've got it and it's small and stuff like that, but I just don't like the look of it, in all honesty. It's not a bad lens, it's just not for me.
Fair enough. Yeah, it's interesting. Like it's the original Q you've got then, the first one.
Yeah, it's like probably third hand, fourth hand by now, and it's like a camera that feels old. Like the autofocus coming from, because I use Sony A9s, which have, I mean, they're old now actually as well, but their autofocus system for a long time, Sony was supporting it. So it's quite like up to date. And you going from those to the Q queue is like traveling back in time, which is actually quite refreshing. And it's like the queue's got like autofocus that's, I'd say, roughly on a par with the DSLRs of 8 years ago, which is when it came out. So again, decent, but like definitely a bit of a learning curve going back to that. And I've enjoyed that process. It's also a buffer that locks up after 10 shots, if that. Whereas on the Sony, like I can shoot 200 frames and then be ready to shoot again within seconds. Like the Leica, the first time I hit the buffer, I thought it had crashed and broken. Like, and I took the battery out and lost all the images because I didn't know what was going on. And now I know that it's just got that limitation. So it's like what's been fun about it is it's been like changing how I shoot in a good way. And I kind of always want to pick it up. And whereas before I used to use one of my Sonys as my personal camera, and then I'd be like, oh, well, which lens to take? Because the Q, it is what is, you know, the lens is what it is. You kind of don't have that. So you just kind of pick it up. And it's great because you can send the raw files to your phone with Wi-Fi easily. And I think you can do that with Sonys, but I just don't tend to do that as much. And so it's kind of just changed how I shoot a little bit. And I've enjoyed that, like the challenge of it. And just having it almost always with me, it means that if I spot a good composition or some good light, like I can capture it, which is quite a nice feeling, you know?
Yeah, it's nice having a separate camera for like family stuff and that as well, I was thinking, because you can like, I don't know, especially in the heat of wedding season, like I like to get back and then put everything onto charge and repack it all. And like, you know, it's just, I know it's like hardly a big issue, but it's just a bit of a faff. So I have to get a camera out and then, yeah, maybe put a certain lens on it and get memory cards and, you know, charge battery and do all that. And then knowing I've got like a wedding the next day, sometimes I'm like, oh, it's a bit annoying. So I'm going to have to charge that battery now or whatever. And like just little things, which I know are really not an issue, but yeah, it's just quite nice to have a separate camera, like say you just always have with you. I just chuck it in like the nappy bag or whatever and things like that sometimes. And, which is kind of nice.
Yeah, and it's just, especially when it's different to what you're using, like it doesn't put me in work mode like at all. I'm in a, like that fun place. And I always say that like I feel like I'm at my best when I'm feeling that like sense of play. Like, and I'm just playing around with the with when it's personal work, you can that is all it really is playing. And having a different camera kind of just helps that headspace. And the last few times I've done like professional jobs since getting the Q, which was only towards the end of the year, I've found that like I've access that feeling of play a little bit more easily because I think I'm doing it on an almost daily basis with my Leica. Like a lot of the stuff I shoot my Leica is terrible. Like I wouldn't show it to people, like because I'm just playing around. It's almost like a sketchbook, but I'm enjoying that playing around. And you know, it's just about like, and also because we've got a little one, you know, it's about like capturing memories of her. And if I'm like reluctant to pick up my Sonys because I feel that, oh, that's my work stuff, and you know, it puts me in work mode, like having a camera that I don't have that baggage with is so useful. And it means that I'm not missing out on memories that I could capture because of something like that, you know.
Yeah, it's probably quite nice being a bit slower with it as well. Like you have to slow down a bit, or like you say, it's just not quite. You don't really want to have to rattle off like 200 frames and then have to cull loads from like personal photos, do you? Because then you just don't bother, do you, half the time? So it's like quite nice just to get a few here and there each day, or whatever, isn't it? Kind of a.
Yeah, exactly. No pressure. All that stuff is great.
Yeah. No, I get that. Yeah, nice. You talked about dance floor flash briefly there, saying about you generally have a camera on, a flash on camera for dance floor. And then quite wide, so you're saying like 17 generally. So yeah, is that like, do you always approach dance floor the same way then? Are you using off camera for dance floor at all or anything like that, or natural light, or are you just kind of, do you have a pretty much solid setup for dance floor stuff?
I'd say the like my bread and butter of dance floor is that wide bit of direct flash with a bit of shutter drag to bring the lights in a little bit. Because especially sometimes when you've got like a quieter dance floor, like a bit of shutter drag and using the sort of exposure to like drop the light everywhere else so you can't see that the dance floor is a bit empty. I find that quite a good way of hiding a quieter dance floor and adding some Atmos into it. And I kind of just like it because it reminds me like back in, I don't know when it was, but I saw like an editorial in a magazine of like it was like these pictures of like they're black and white documentary film pictures of like teenagers from Kensington and Chelsea. Who were about like between the ages of like 16 and 19 or something like that, you know, so like young teenagers, young people anyway. And they were all like really having these really debauched drinking nights because that's what you do when you're that age. And but they were all dressed really posh and they were in these really posh environments. And I really loved that like mixture of the debauchery and the sort of pop the juxtaposition with the posh stuff. And they had this really like rabbit in the headlight style direct flash look to it in black and white, and I really loved that. And I found that I was like, that's what I kind of want to capture on the dance floor. Like, I don't worry about making people look flattering. I get close to that wide angle lens because I want to get that sense of like energy and fun, because I feel like that's what I want out of that part of the day. And so like having it in, when I, because I shoot on like F8 and I'm like mostly zone focusing, so I almost don't, sometimes I don't even put the camera up to my own. I'm just kind of shoving it in where I wouldn't normally go as a human being, so be too worried about like getting kicked in the head or whatever. And I'm just sort of getting my camera in there, and I just feel like I get much better pictures as a result. So I do use a bit of off-camera flash, particularly for the first dance. I use bounce flash when I need to, but and I've been playing around with a bit of leaving one flash up here like that the rest of the year, and like kind of sometimes shooting against it if there's like options to do that. And I've got like a lens that it's a Canon DSLR lens, and the only reason I own it is for its flare. So I like shooting into that flash to get that flare sometimes adds a bit of something different. And I've sort of played around also towards the end of the year with a bit more like high ISO and just kind of playing around and trying to expose to the lights and trying to shoot into the lights and things like that and sort of see what happens. And you get fewer keepers, but I feel like it's something a bit more different, which is quite nice.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. It's kind of sometimes I look at other people's setups or I think of things. I'm like, right, I'll try that. And, you know, putting up like a million flashes everywhere and all this stuff. But then sometimes it gets a bit complicated for me. And I'm like, actually, like you say, especially with the dance floor, you never know what you're going to get. Like, really, do you? So sometimes it's just crazy. And then whatever you do is probably going to be good. But yeah, like you say, sometimes you got to think, well, they don't want it to look like it was really shit. Well, not shit, but really quiet, do they? Like a couple, you know, because you only need a few people dancing. They're like, oh, this is great, everyone's dancing, but like it might not look great in pictures, especially if you're wide. So yeah, that kind of makes sense. Again, kind of ties into what you're saying with the corpus of almost like going in and seeing like, right, what are they going to want or what's the problem, and then trying to fix it, I guess, where you're like, look, yeah, there's only two people really going for it, but that's great. Like I can still show an amazing dance floor, but I just don't need all this other stuff in there that makes it look a bit bare or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. I always think like the tough thing about weddings is we are, as you said earlier, like we're sometimes still surprised with stuff. It's useful to be able to go into a room and think, right, what am I going to do here? Like, you know, we've all had this situation where we've walked into a room and suddenly found there's black walls, hard pin pricks of light, nothing to really work with. And you've got to have a plan as to what you do in that situation. And you know, there's always, you know, going to be situations where you can only do what you can do. But if you have like a skill set, which means that you've got something you can pull out of the bag, it's just helpful. Even if it's something that you're not necessarily going to show, like if you can add, like for example, I don't really show backlit flash shots in the rain because I don't think it really goes with the rest of my style, but I know how to do it. And I've done it a couple of times when it's been a really rainy wedding day and I feel like the couple haven't had that shot with a bit of pizzazz. And so, like, just having that as an option is useful, so that you can feel like you've given the couple something extra, basically.
Yeah, that makes sense. And that's some of the stuff, like say, we maybe don't show because it's not what we want to shoot much of, or say maybe it doesn't fit with, like say, your style, or you just don't want couples booking you for that type of shot. But like, you know, couples might still love it anyway because like they're not seeing as many, you know, backlit rain shots as we have. So yeah, it's good to at least know how to do it and do it relatively quickly, so you're not like, you know, say I might do it once a year, and so suddenly it's a bit of a faff. I'm like, oh crap, what was that setting again? Or what, you know, and you don't want to be running around in back and forward in the rain, you're trying to sort your flash out. So
Yeah,
yeah, it's just a
exactly.
good to have the skills in it, I guess. And that's probably a key takeaway from here is like you say, you just, you know, just knowing this stuff, having it there, no matter what happens, you kind of always got a fallback. Like, you know, if you can just do a bit of on camera flash stuff on the dance floor, it doesn't matter what the room's like or the DJ lights, the band lights or anything, you can kind of always go to that setup, can you, I guess?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's been what's been fun about second shooting is that depending on the photographer, depending on the wedding, depending on the scenario, you can sometimes experiment a little bit. And that's when I do it. Like, obviously, I make sure the main photographer's got what they need and also check with them, all that kind of stuff before anything to do anything too out there. But like, that's where I've kind of had a little bit of a play is when I've had a little bit of leeway to do it. And, or it's just been a wedding where I know I've got what I need already and start to sort of play. I think, oh, what if I set up a flash over there? And I'm not even a big, I wouldn't say I'm even technical particularly, but I just have a fear of being in a situation where I don't know what to do and can't produce. Because we've all been at weddings where, you know, they've shut off the lighting really suddenly and everything's dark and like an impromptu dance starts or something like that. And, you know, you need to have a plan as to what you do in that scenario, sort of thing.
You mentioned verticals a bit. Is that like, do you think it's an Instagrammy thing where you like it's, or is it just that you found that actually certain types of images you just prefer being in like you know, portrait orientation or whatever.
Yeah, I'm guilty as charged. I do think Instagram has influenced that, which I didn't really like. I was quite resistant to it for a long time, but I sort of gave it a try a little bit, and I liked some of the things you can do with verticals, where like in a compositional way you can cut out a lot of noise. If you're in like a messy environment, you can get a slightly more minimal frame with a vertical, like, so it has its place, I'm finding, and you can sort of mess around with it. It doesn't have to be just the way everyone does it on Instagram, but I've just found it a little bit of a extra compositional toy to play with, and over time I've got quite into it. And you know, like the 50 works brilliantly for verticals, and I think is the sort of the best lens for verticals in my opinion, but using it with wider lenses gives you some quite strange results and can be quite fun at times as well. So like I see it as almost like a new toy that I've got to play with that I didn't have before, and I've quite enjoyed that. It's been a bit of a new lease of life in that way. And so it's sort of, unfortunately, I regret to say it was partly because of Instagram that I started doing it, but I've now kind of embraced it and see it as part of my style, you know.
Yeah, I don't mind it all. Like, I, you know, I'll do it for portraits and stuff sometimes, which is fairly, you know, typical, and even sometimes walking down the aisle, maybe things like that, where I just, you know, the key focus is the person kind of thing. And so like, yeah, it makes sense. I can kind of fill the frame a bit, or sometimes it's just partly for the purely fact of like the lens I've got on, where it's like, yeah, I'm shooting maybe horizontal as they're like, they're closer, but like when they're further back, it's like you're not seeing as much of them. So, or whatever, or like vertical can fill it more as they come forward and stuff, can't it? So, you know what I mean? So yeah, sometimes, yeah, I just do it for that. But I really don't mind it. I know some people are very, for storytelling, are very anti sort of vertical, which is fair enough. But I really don't mind it. But I suppose we're just seeing more of it as, again, makes us try it. And then we kind of actually realize, well, not just because I want to share stuff on Instagram, but like, actually, I don't mind it for certain situations. And you kind of, that play again, isn't it, I guess?
I think as long as you're like making your own and not only doing it because of a trend or whatever, I think that that's okay. I think that was the thing for me, was the sort of tipping point came when I felt like I was starting to see how I shoot vertically, not how other people shoot vertically. And that was the moment where I was like, okay, this is something I will keep doing, basically.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I love it. Well, look, thanks so much for your time, Tom. I want to we'll jump on just for a little members only stuff, just for 10 or 15 minutes. So if you are a PKI member, then yep, stay tuned and listening to that. But yeah, just, I really appreciate your time, mate. And where's the best place for people to go and find you then?
So I've got my difficult to spell ethnic surname. It'll be at Tom Eisenberg Photo at Instagram, you know, Instagram, all that kind of stuff. But Eisenberg is spelt differently to how you think, like almost no one gets it right. And it's tomeisenberg.com is my website as well.
Cool. Yeah, well, I'll link it all below anyway to save people spelling. But
let's see if you get it right, eh?
Yeah, well, I always double check everything for like titles and things like that, so I'm sure I'll be fine by the end. But nice one. But yeah, no, thanks so much, Tom. Appreciate it, mate.
Awesome, mate. It's been a pleasure. Cheers.